Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast. It's me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
All right. So, episode 3 of Abaddon. So the goal here, guys, is to bring you all up to quote-unquote modern 40K. The problem with Abaddon is it's going to be an arbitrary stop point because every book that comes out in 40K...
has him. Don's in everything.
He's in everything. So we...
Don is everywhere.
Brad and I were having a discussion. We decided we're going to take you right up to kind of the start of 8th edition.
We're going to take you to Boom Boom.
Yeah, right about that moment, and we're going to get there. So... after that, we're going to kind of maybe come back later to it, but that's our goal today.
You know what? As usual, I need to talk shit about the notes. Also, I'm inching up my microphone constantly because it upsets John and it makes me happy.
Yeah, Brad likes to talk. When we say talking to a microphone, Brad likes talking to a microphone the way that you eat an ice cream.
But this is how we were indecisive about how far we're going to go, because our current notes say, so we're going to go up to about, and there's a blank line underneath.
Because I didn't know where we were going to go. We had to decide this at lunch.
Yeah.
So anyway, quick recap as to where we are at this stage. First episode, we took the origins of Abaddon all the way up to the end of the Horus Heresy. Second episode, as you guys heard, was we kind of took the rise of Abaddon, what he does in the warp to become the War Master and lead the Black Legion. And this one, we're going to kind of take you from that era all the way up through what are basically his crusades to the modern era. So,
and I want to start with the fact the overriding story arc of the Don is that he is powered by chaos, but he isn't subservient to chaos.
Yes.
And that is the thing, is he is still human, as much as a super soldier could be human.
Yeah, it's the only reason he's as successful as he is.
Yeah, well, he refuses to be a thrall to chaos. Yeah. And then again, you have to go back to Horus. Horus was Abaddon's everything. And he felt that he failed because of weakness and becoming a thrall of chaos. And he's like, I'm never going to do this. And again, I've said this before, I'm going to say it again, though. What makes him such an intriguing character is he's failed. He has self-doubt and everything else. And he refuses to just take this absolute power because he doesn't want to be absolutely controlled.
Yeah. And there's a lot of great stories about this where Abaddon seems to effectively figure out that the chaos gods hate each other more than they hate anything. So he just basically puts them into bidding wars against each other for everything he wants.
Oh, 100%.
Hey, I want to be stronger. Which of you, and just goes to every single god and says, well, what do you want for that? And then he goes, well, yeah, Zinch, that's a big thing. You know, Khorne said all I had to do was slaughter an entire system. What do you give it to me for? And Brad said really well in the last cast, Abaddon's the most successful chaos warrior in history.
Oh, like laughably. Because they also give him access to their legions each time, too. Because they go, and this is how he controls people that are physically, be it psychic, physical power, whatever, more powerful than him. He gets them under his thumb because their patrons, which they are in thrall to, he is not in thrall to, he makes a bargain and says, I need this. What are you going to give me? Kind of thing.
And he gets entire armies, all this stuff. And it's really, we're starting the cast on this because it is literally the most important piece of Abaddon is that he is chaos undivided.
Yes.
It's anything other than that is adorable.
And he's chaos undivided. He's not ascended. He's not a demon, demon prince. He has not accepted everything with that. He is still just doing it his way. Should we play Sinatra right now on that?
Yeah, exactly. He's doing the work of the chaos gods, but the key element of what I just said there is the S. It's them plural. And that keeps him from ever falling into the trap that Angron, even Mortarion's
madness. I mean, Mortarion's terrible with it. Yeah. Mortarion hates what he... no one hates Mortarion as much as Mortarion hates
Mortarion. But the fact of the matter is, they are stuck. They gave, they gave the ultimate sacrifice, and now they and their legion...
they're pawns.
Yeah, that's it. I have no control over anything.
You're the most powerful pawn around, but you are still a pawn.
Exactly.
And he refuses... And the thing is that is the big, we talked about it in the first episodes, everybody that was a father figure to him, all of them betrayed him to him, fully betrayed him. And all of them, because of their weakness, is why they fell.
And I think another piece that's important here is this level of independence that Abaddon has, no one has. Like in the 40K universe, it's really Xenos factions are the only ones that get this. No one in the Imperium has this level of kind of like autonomy, effectively.
Oh, Abaddon does what Abaddon does.
Yeah. And that's actually like for those people who are like big Chaos players, this is cool as shit when you're playing Abaddon. Yeah, we're playing Abaddon. You're able to. He's in charge. You are. You know, the general for someone who is in absolute charge of what they're doing.
And the thing is that he is a wildly great planner, but also while he's not trying to get people killed, he also holds none of these gifts as something he has to have, whether it be his personal power, whether it be the legions that he's given, whether it be demonic legions, Chaos Space Marine legions, it doesn't matter. He holds them all as ephemeral. They're just, they're here for the thing that I have to do tomorrow. Yeah. If they're gone, cool. They're gone.
That's actually a great segue, because what we're going to get into is the Long War of the Crusades. And these are actually, so the Crusades to me are really cool, because we call them Crusades, and I laugh because GW has just shit writing sometimes. A Crusade is something that usually you wage over, basically you wage it for extremely long periods of time and blah, 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 blah. No. Abaddon's crusades were actually missions.
Well, because I was saying some of his crusades were, I needed to go pick up this thing of eggs from the store.
Yeah. I mean,
he wanted to achieve this. And sometimes achieving is legitimate, getting an object. And other times it was, I'm going to blow this thing up so that it's not there later.
For my next one. So I will say, when we call these crusades, that was some very liberal writing on the part of GW in usage of that word, because they're not. As we're going to cover a few of them right now, because not all of them, because there's 13 and some of them are pretty lame, we should be perfectly honest.
He's like, I got eggs.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I got the eggs and I went back home and made an omelet. What a wonderful crusade, Abaddon.
It was successful.
Yeah, exactly. I also picked up some chives for additional flavor.
Free range.
Yes. So that's like, we'll skip some of them. Keep in mind, though, that when we call them a crusade, what they really are were missions, because Abaddon has a plan, and his plan is to conquer the galaxy. At the core of conquering the galaxy, what he realizes fairly early is he has to take out the Emperor. If he takes out the Emperor, the Astronomicon crashes.
But he knows that Horus made the huge mistake. It's not only
about, exactly.
That's my own.
It's all a plan. Everything to him is a layered plan. But the biggest mistake, one of the biggest mistakes Horus also made, was attacking Sol directly. Because it's never, even once you kill the Emperor, you've got, well, depending on what part of the crusade, we're talking about Gilliman is alive or dead. Spoiler alert, whatever. But you know, it's like, but you've got, if he were to just to launch out of the Eye of Terror, take all of his forces, go to Sol, kill the Emperor, let's say he pulls that off, everyone's dead right afterwards. Because the remaining forces slaughter him. So instead, he makes a systematic plan to begin pulling down the defenses of the Imperium, rip the Imperium down from its core.
I mean, maybe even rip the galaxy in half.
It would help if you could actually just cut the galaxy in half. And I wonder if
that's going to be anything
to get there. But let's jump into the first Black Crusade. Actually, I like the story a lot. So we're about 1,000 years post Horus. You know, maybe, sorry, 500 years. About 500 years.
This is a big deal, though, because at this point in time, because they still use the Emperor's way of dealing with chaos, which is don't admit it exists, kill everyone that saw it.
Mm-hmm.
This amount of time, chaos is almost the boogeyman for most of the galaxy. There's still are parts where they're active, but there's a lot of the galaxy that just is.
Well, because even if they were, when they were active, it was a raiding party. It was like Drukhari. They'd come out of nowhere, or you get like a cultist uprising. It was minimal, and the Imperium could just, between Inquisition, Grey Knights, Sisters, etc., they just stamp it out and it would go away.
Yeah,
it was not a threat.
And the thing is that he comes back, and they're like, and he comes back in force.
Oh, he explodes out of the Eye of Terror.
Yeah, like this is a large. This is a. It's actually the first chaos active legion to come out since that time.
Effectively, the Eye of Terror has always been there, and they know it's there. They know Chaos is in there, but it's a little raiding party, so who gives a shit? A armada comes out of this thing and just starts burning the galaxy around it.
And the thing is I want to go into, because everybody, there has been some retcons, but this I do not think is a retcon, because what I thought he did in the First Crusade is he just wanted to see how the Imperium reacted.
Yeah.
He literally went out because he attacked everywhere.
Yeah.
If you're trying to win, his plan made no sense. What he was trying to do is go, what happens when I go to this segmentum, this segmentum, this segmentum? And he went, okay, cool. And then they left.
Yeah.
They literally just.
Well, he went and grabbed this. We'll get to the segment.
Well, I'm saying, well, sorry.
Yeah.
But in their eyes, he just left.
Yeah, you're right. The standpoint of the Imperium, he comes out, he attacks like crazy, burns it. I mean, you can when you read through the First Crusade, you can kind of see, I think there's a few things going on all at once. One was exactly what you said. He's trying to kind of test, like, what are the defenses? What, you know, I haven't seen these guys in 500 years of their time, warp time, who knows how long that is, right?
It's either 5,000 years or 2 minutes.
Yeah, 6 weeks, whatever, yeah. You know, it's like, but he wants to test them. He also needs to keep his allies. Because the thing that Abaddon's been doing really well is he's been getting these, what I would call fully fallen legions, Slaanesh being the big one, Emperor's Children being the big one, to kind of back him because they're massive legions. So, of course,
they're wildly big at the time. Yeah. If you recall, we talked about that last. Yeah. Slaanesh was fairly untouched at this time.
Yeah.
And they didn't start to separate until much later.
Exactly. Yeah. And so he's coming out. So they're doing slave raids. The Khorne guys are killing people. The Nurgle's just doing Nurgle stuff. And Tzeentch is.
Nurgle's actually at its lowest power level right now.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, it's right at this point.
Because he hasn't pushed the plagues out into the galaxy as well.
I forgot about that from a timing standpoint. But yeah, they literally just, they come out of this, out of the Eye of Terror and just wreck the galaxy. Just wreck it. One thing that caught the Imperium so brutally off guard with this crusade is that in all of their prior experiences, what you would do is Chaos would attack. You'd basically, so is the Imperium shitty, you let the world burn. You wouldn't even throw defenses really at it. You just surround it. And then once Chaos kind of finished attacking and there was no defense, they always just turned on themselves. Because all of a sudden, and you can think of it this way. Like you go to a planet and it's Emperor's Children. It's maybe Thousand Suns.
Yeah, Night Lords. You got it.
Whatever it's going to be.
And they'll fight each other.
Yeah, they're all there for slaves. They're all there to take people back.
They'll also, because their gods hate each other.
Yeah.
They'll all fight each other. And also, once the fighting subsides, you also lose the demonic incursions. Because once you lose the power from that, the demons start to not be able to continue to be in the Imperium, the real world. The Mimiterium. So like you basically lose for especially a demonic incursion. You have to. It has to be a snowball or it goes away. So effectively, if you just cordon off the area,
they burn themselves.
It'll just be gone by itself.
And so that's how the Imperium always acted. That was kind of their trick that they were doing in these worlds. That didn't happen here.
Well, because also Abaddon had used his his job fair to fill a lot of roles because, if you don't recall, Abaddon went on a head-lopping off tour. I'm joking, but I'm not joking. He just killed by decapitation almost all of the people leading because he thought that they were shitty leaders.
Yeah.
And he got new leaders and he basically let them see him lopping off the dome of the last guy. And he goes, well, Phil, you're now in charge because Ted, I thought, didn't do a good job. Not going to say I'm going to do anything to you. I'm just saying Ted didn't do a good job. Ted
didn't do a good job. So next time, maybe listen to Abaddon's plan.
Yeah.
And so this caught the Imperium really off guard. This was the first time since Horus that they actually had to fight an organized force that kept fighting.
It was an organized force that kept fighting with a real plan, not just berserker crazies.
Yeah, we grabbed a bunch of locals. Like his brother said, we raided the Gap, took all the employees and went back to the Eye of Terror. No, we burned, we took out the defenses. Now and then we started reinforcing our position.
And also stealing all of your resources. Yeah, this is now my factories. These are now my spaceports.
Exactly. And so this became, the Imperium over the course of the First Crusade had to launch all of their forces back at Abaddon. And by all the forces, this includes Titan legions, by the way. I mean, they went, once they figured out what was happening, they were going on. Because, we probably should have mentioned, that the Lords of Terror were useless at this stage. This is probably one of their worst stages.
I mean, you know what? I'm not even getting into that. We'll do an entire cast. Brad, I hate the Lords of Terror with a passion.
Yeah. When we talk about all the problems of the Lords of Terror, this post-Horus Heresy era is maybe the worst version of themselves. Because as we said
before, still infighting right now.
Well, because this was, to my mind, one of the worst ones, because they've had 500 years of no emperor.
And they've done nothing.
Yeah, and they've just
been nothing for 500 years.
Yeah. They made it worse.
I got to get my chi together. I'm trying to mojo up. They literally did more to separate and put the Imperium into its own, they almost dark age of technology, the Imperium.
And so Abaddon's first crusade should have been pretty quick. He should have come out of the Eye of Terror. The Imperium should have seen it. The Space Marine Legion
was literally getting
launched
over.
Yes. And it wrecked him. And instead, they just kind of were like, oh, maybe someone should do something.
Yeah. I really think that they got to Abaddon's first crusade was the first season of the Abaddon show was so successful. He's like, I didn't write a second season.
Yeah. I think Abaddon in this grade got so far ahead of his plans that he was like, should we just go back? Like, this feels like, I personally, he probably thought it was a trap. Like, why is there no defense?
Like no one is doing anything to me.
Who's coming for me? Because there's nothing
here. Like, this has to be them trying to get me to overextend. But nope, they just sucked.
Now, I will say, Abaddon did have a plan, though. And his plan was really actually kind of genius. It was actually for power. And as we were just...
This is his first personal power grab.
Yeah. As we just discussed with the way he works with the gods, he knows you can't go to a god and ask for power. It's impossible because you have to become a thrall. So what does he do? He just feeds the gods. And the way this was written, from the way I was reading out of the Codex, was basically that the gods, if you give them enough of what they want, so you create enough death for Khorne, enough kind of decay for Nurgle, whatever the hell Slaanesh wants. And we all know, I just don't want to say it on a PG podcast. And then even for Tzeentch, just fear and confusion for Tzeentch. They seem to almost
this is big because this is knowledge. He was trying to figure out what their plans were. It's all knowledge.
Yeah, it's knowledge. And what happens is they get a little bit drunk from all this stuff. And so you can get them to give you information they would never give you otherwise.
You know, it's funny they say that. I never even really thought about it as much, but the Chaos Gods are giddy teenagers sometimes because they get excited because they are, in essence, an idea. They're not adults. They only are it. They operate always on.
This is there's one thing that makes me happy, and you give me that thing.
I will do that thing right now.
Yeah.
And as much as possible as I can.
Abaddon realized that these Chaos Gods had secrets, and he wanted their secrets. So he does. He effectively feeds the Chaos Gods with a ton of their utmost desire, which is always just bad things for humanity.
And he wanted to get the coolest part of his model, but we'll continue on.
Oh, yeah. So foreshadow, because that's all we do in this podcast. But it's
the coolest part of his model.
It is, and we're not shitty about our foreshadowing. We cover it in the same episode. I've never foreshadowed anyone to, and see you next week and see what happens. We'll get there today.
We'll be right back after a quick break. It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore, 40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
There was a hidden world within the Eye of Terror called Erlon. Or Erlon?
Yeah, Erlon. The biggest thing about this is a little bit of a fantasy sci-fi trope.
Yeah.
Because there's just a place where you could go and they have all the artifacts. The Hand of Vecna's there. Everything's there.
Yeah. It's the British Museum.
Yes, it is.
Some of the best name I've ever seen is like name something that about the British Museum that's confusing. It's like because none of the stuff in it is British.
It is other people's stuff.
Yeah. So Erlon is a hidden world in the middle of the Eye of Terror, which is technically the Immaterium, where the Chaos Gods store their favorite toys.
And the thing is that this is one of those things that is they've done it different in a couple of the stories, but this planet is effectively. You can never find it if you want to find it unless someone lets you find
it. Yeah, it's one of those dumb tropes, but whatever. Yeah, it's like, I shit on GW enough. Well, I'll let this one go because this is kind of a D&D trope. Like D&D.
I mean, it is, though. It was just one of those things where it's the unfindable thing unless you succeed in the five quests that will allow you to find out where it exists.
Exactly.
And he finds it.
But the story's cool as shit.
No, the story is fantastic because... No, this is another thing. It makes it complex because to get through this, I'm going to get excited here for a minute. Go everybody. For it. Just excited. Just deal with it. So he has to literally go through the trials effectively, which is he has to fight. He has to fight through things that he's not sure he can actually defeat. Because like once he gets in there, he kind of goes, oh, shit, there's more to this than I thought.
You don't land on the planet and pick the crap up. You land on the planet on the outside of the labyrinth. And we say labyrinth. We don't mean like, ooh, it's a corn maze.
It's also a planet maze, but it's also not a planet maze because it's, again, in the warp. So it's bigger than the planet and smaller than everything. You have no idea. It's gigantic. So he has to go through this labyrinth. He has to get through, but he has to do all these trials. He has to fight. He has to physically defeat things that might not be able to. And one of the stories with it is when he does this is he's fighting things that he was like, oh, shit. Can I actually do this? This is a little bit more, but then he also has to go through all these
mental trials.
Yeah. And that is actually one of them is one of the things about the physical things is to get you to self-doubt because you immediately go into mental trials right after and they want you to be at your lowest. Oh shit. Can I now defeat the next thing? I'm doubting myself. And then boom, you're slammed with all these mental temptations, but also they're trying to dominate him. This is the gods, I think, really thought that we're going to give you this gift. I'm definitely doing air quotes. Yeah, we're going to give you this gift. And you're like, yeah, we're going to 100% break him. He'll have to ask for our help. We will make him our thrall during this process. And he his best trait is Abaddon is like, I'm going to do this thing. But you could go through the door, Abaddon. I said I'm going through the wall.
Yeah.
But there's a door right there. Nope.
Nope. Yeah. I already committed. We're doing this.
I forgot to mention, he rolls down there solo. All that stuff.
Completely solo. He's by himself fighting his way. And when we say fighting our way through a labyrinth, we're not talking Dark Souls type thing where it's just, ooh, the next boss is harder. These are real trials where this Brad said, I got to fight. Then I have to avoid temptation. Then I have to solve a riddle.
They're literally trying to psychically dominate him at every turn.
He's effectively fighting. I mean, it's not, he doesn't fight all four chaos gods in it, but in some ways
he kind of does though.
Yeah.
But the best thing about it is it now, even when he's fighting, they're trying to psychically, he's basically battling for his soul this entire time.
But he pulls it off. He actually gets to the middle of it. And this part's a little bit dumb, but the outcome's amazing. He sees, like, there's basically a void in the middle. So he's already in the immaterium. There's a void in the middle of it. And it's just imagine kind of like almost a crack in the universe.
He goes into a black hole.
It's a mini black hole. Well, you know, he just puts his arm. He sees a very small black hole and goes, "I put my arm in that."
And he just pulls out.
And then reaches around inside of a hole. And I realize some of you are laughing right now, and you should be. This is a very funny reference. But he's reaching around the hole until he feels something hard. And then out pulls, to Brad's credit, the coolest sword in all of
it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It also has a world-dominating demon inside of it. Yeah.
So he pulls out.
That who also was a trap. Mm-hmm. Because this world-dominating demon inside the sword is supposed to immediately dominate Abaddon's mind.
And nope.
And Abaddon's like, nah, I ain't going out like that.
I don't give two fucks about this thing. And so I'm going to let Brad pronounce it.
Oh, I've ruined this. I've been literally trying to say this word for 25 years now because I literally read Index Codex. Codex Chaos is one of my first things, and I screwed it up then. But his sword is Drachnian.
Yeah. And this is his sword. And this thing,
by the way, please phonetically put in and or link us in the Discord or Facebook what the act, because both of us know. By the way, we kind of didn't look this up specifically so we could have
it. This is going to be more fun. And I also look forward to all of you trying to spell Drachnian. because accents also matter.
He spinal taps himself with his sword.
Oh, yeah.
He does turn it up to 11. He is literally, this thing hits another one of the swords. While the sword is amazing in the game, in the lore,
is way better.
Holy shit.
This is one of those areas where the lore and the game cannot overlap. If you were to write rules for Drachnian.
No, he pulled out Stormbringer.
You'd basically be going through like Abaddon attacks and that thing's auto dead.
It killed his soul.
Yeah, you didn't roll any dice. Yeah.
Yeah, that just happens.
That just happens.
He swung in your general direction.
Yeah, I got close to you with this sword, you automatically lose. Like, so, but in lore, this sword's so cool.
This is a big deal too, because a lot of when people meet him later on, a lot of people that have won against Abaddon didn't know that he's been juiced up.
Yeah.
And then they end up having.
The notes that I put here is that he's now really probably more powerful than corrupted Horus and with none of the loss of his soul. So he's got the power of.
Up and down. I would go back and forth on that because Abaddon waxes and wanes depending on how many gifts he receives per
Yeah. Time. I just think at this stage, Abaddon one-on-one, there's nothing in the universe that's going to take him one on one.
Oh, you're going to have so many people are going to lose their mind about that.
I don't care. I'm talking from a lore standpoint. From a gameplay standpoint, yeah. I saw that at Grotz one time. But that's fine. What I'm saying from a lore standpoint, they wrote this to be, he is probably on par or a little bit above Horus in power. But that doesn't matter because his soul is not corrupted. Which actually makes him more powerful than Horus, because as powerful as Horus was.
He has free will.
Yeah, he had no free will. So that actually would put Abaddon as one of the most powerful beings in the galaxy at this stage from this sword. So we're going to call, I think, so long story short, first Black Crusade, A1 success.
A1 success. Also, the Imperium about this time, because of course, as during the story, as soon as he grabs the sword, everyone finally shows up and does something about it.
Yeah, they show up and they attack and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, he, as Brad said earlier, they just bail out.
They Forrest Gumped it. He goes, I'm pretty tired now.
Well, he was already back in the warp doing this. So the rest of his forces were like, all right, I guess we're done here. And so the Imperium, just I like thinking about these things from the Imperium standpoint. This giant invading army comes out of the Eye of Terror, and we're going to engage, we're going to fight them, and they just retreat back into the Eye of Terror.
They're also in the middle of beating the shit out of you.
Yeah.
And they're wildly winning at this point.
And they just bail. And so now the Imperium's got a bit of a problem of like, oh shit, this part of the galaxy is kind of a big threat. We should do something about it.
They basically made this the DMZ.
Yeah.
And but the opposite. Yeah. Instead of the demo, this is the capital MZ. They went, we need to make sure that these guys can't come through that, you know, that the hole in the sky, that's a problem.
And we're going to foreshadow really quickly here too. There's a system with a planet.
Cough, cough, Cadia.
Right out, says named Cadia.
And they, do we want to get into the?
We'll get through it in a second. Yeah, okay. We'll get through it in a second. So effectively, we'll get to Cadia right in a second. But before we get to Cadia, we should just effectively point out, the Imperium realizes that this is not the last time this is going to come, the Eye of Terror is going to be a problem. So why don't we just put all of our military there?
And they start fortifying. I mean, it's comical.
Yeah.
They do it like anime Bugs Bunny esque, yeah, where they just go, well, why don't we just make everything that floats and is a rock, just put a gun on it and aim at the Eye of Terror.
I mean, we're going to do a friend of discuss. We're going to do a cast in the future on the different types of worlds that exist within the Imperium. But when your world's called a fortress world, it's not subtle.
Well, the thing is about a fortress world is one of the biggest things to say is your world no longer has anything else.
Yeah.
They strip your world for, they literally pimp your ride.
Yeah.
They, if your world had water, no, it doesn't.
We don't care about the water. We don't need anything here. We're going to put guns and people to work.
We need guns and we need walls.
Yeah.
That's it.
And so they build a fortress world. And we probably should dive into Cadia right now, because Cadia is going to come up. If you talk about Abaddon, you're going to talk about
Cadia. Well, the thing is with Cadia, do we want to immediately talk about the pylons?
Well, let's get to kind of the history of Cadia
first. Okay.
I think it's great. So Cadia, like a lot of the key worlds in 40K, was renamed. So Cadia had a different name before. And
well, Cadia wasn't exactly... This is one of those... One, let's just talk about the Lorgar thing on the side. Because literally... The entirety of the Imperium's religion is written by their devil, which is Lorgar, who initiated all of the Horus Heresy.
Yeah. And Lorgar, as we covered prior, got slapped by the Emperor.
Yep.
And when that happened, if you guys remember from our cast, or if you didn't listen to the cast, whatever.
you should.
Yeah, but if you haven't...
It's a pretty cool episode.
Lorgar was upset and decided that he needed to go find out what the truth was. Is there a God, effectively? Am I worshiping
him? What is the truth, basically?
It was truth. And he ended up, after kind of a little walkabout, he ended up on a planet that spoke a similar language to the his planet and had this deep worship of the Chaos Gods. After experiencing time on that planet, he basically gained what he called the truth. This is it.
He became the prophet of the Chaos Gods.
And then
the
first prophet, left that
planet, well, the first human prophet.
Right. And when he left that planet, he wanted to keep it a secret. So he bombed it from space and wiped it out. If you can't figure out why I'm telling you that story, it's on you. That's Cadia. So that is this planet that the Imperium arrives to after the first Black Crusade and resettles it. Well, this place is super convenient.
And for you guard players,
why don't we just settle it here?
Cadia becomes, you know what, screw it, I'm going to give the Cadia people props.
Yeah.
Cadia becomes a planet of, if you're a regular human, you better be a badass.
Oh, Cadia is hardcore.
Like, these people are the grittiest of grittiest dudes of all time. Because shit is always going down. Because even when there's not a crusade, stuff flies out of the broken sky and messes with you.
Yeah, I mean, like, you are the first nice house outside the bad neighborhood.
Yes.
And by bad neighborhood, I mean the worst neighborhood.
Yeah.
The challenge is that we're not done talking about Cadia history, though. Because we just did a little bit of history.
Well, Cadia also has a 65 million years ago history.
Yes.
Which, by the way, is a big deal for Cadia because Necrons were there.
Yeah, let's foreshadow a little bit because it's always fun. Cadia was also a key world for the Necrons against the old ones.
Because Necrons just made technology that foiled the warp, which is how advanced they were. Also, when we do talk about Necrons, we're going to talk about how ridiculous they are in the game and how they should be. But their technology, even though they don't utilize or access at all the warp, they just scienced up anti-warp stuff.
And this is going to be the standard part of every podcast where I go on my talk shit on GW writing tangent. So, according to the books, and this is the lore, all over Cadia, there are thousands of pylons, which is effectively a super tall pyramid, just a super tall, narrow pyramid, all over Cadia. And that's just something people are kind of cool with.
They didn't even bother.
Yeah, they didn't bother. Now, the Aztec, they try to figure out what they are, but they're... And I remember when I first got into Warhammer and learning about the pylons, I thought, oh, there's like three or four of them. It's like this thing, like you go to Egypt, there's a few pyramids, but it's not all of... Like, you go to Cairo, there's no pyramids in Cairo. It's just there's an area where there's a few pyramids. No, they're freaking everywhere. The entire planet is covered in these giant black obsidian pylons that are hundreds of feet tall.
And they also always point towards the Eye of Terror.
Yeah, they all point to the Eye of Terror, and they just exist there. And everyone's like, yeah, whatever. Like, I just can't get over that, and I'm sorry, but I can't.
They also have them at more places than just Cadia. But
yeah, they're all they're feathered, but Cadia has so many of them. We'll kind of dive into those in a little bit.
It is a point, good point. We have one of the good points here, and we definitely need to say this. The Necrons have not awakened yet.
Yeah, this is pre-Necrons.
This is way pre-Necrons. This is
pre-Necrons. So they don't even know. So to their credit, they don't know what these things are for. There's these giant pylons, and there are some cool stories about, like, the Admech obviously see these and get just incredibly excited about it, and they can't do anything with it because every time you try to, you can't break them. If you try to send a server, it just overloads instantly.
Yeah, I was just saying, any machinery they used against it just blew up.
Yeah, so they are there. But I guess Cadia's position in the universe made it better. So are we going to get back to Cadia?
Yeah. I'm going to say, yeah, that's probably going to happen.
So from here, we foreshadowed it earlier. For anyone who don't know, anyone doesn't know, there are only 13 Crusades so far.
And the thing is one got him his sword. And also tested.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to see, is the Imperium still a real thing?
Right.
To be honest with you. Because at that point, he doesn't actually know. He doesn't know if the Imperium just collapsed.
He's been gone. You know, and again, you just don't forget, he's rather persona non grata from the Imperium. So peeking your head out of the Eye of Terror, you don't do that without a
sweep. He's also pretty well known. It's not like he just goes to the mall and just hangs out.
He's kind of wandering like, oh, hey. You know, the Steve Buscemi meme of like, hello, other Imperium members. Yeah. Like, what's up with the Emperor today? How's he doing? Like,
could you give me some, I don't know, maybe schematics?
Anyone have a map of where Gilliman and the Lion are right now? I just kind of would like to know.
Just wondering, just curious.
So Crusades 2 through 12 are pretty quick.
They're all of them have missions. They want to weaken certain, they either want to get something or they want to weaken something.
Exactly. Yeah. They were all done with a goal. Abaddon, again, he's got one purpose. I am going to reclaim the galaxy for me and my brethren. I cannot do that if the Imperium exists. The Imperium has me outnumbered, has me out equipped, has me out logistics. So I have to do these crusades. They're not their missions, to kind of pull them down piece by piece and weaken it so I can crush it. So that ends up being the purpose of this. That being said, I would genuinely get bored covering all of these 10 crusades. So we kind of picked a few that are fun.
I mean, the fourth crusade is badass.
That's what I'm saying. So we're just going to skip 2 and 3.
Because it's also like full on video game style.
Yeah.
Because the Don goes down to the Cadian Gate himself.
Yes. It's made, the Cadian Gate is made of adamantium because the Wolverine comic came out well before 40K was written. And why invent a new material when I have one that everyone already knows exists?
Duh.
Yeah. So there's a gate made of adamantium. Again, it's made of Wolverine.
And he full on animes it.
Oh, yeah.
He kills it with one swing.
But before, Brad's not giving this story enough credit. The entire the Black Legion is bouncing off of this gate.
True
the
story.
The Imperial Guard above it are shooting down and giggling, like, ha ha, you can't get in here. Monty Python.
He literally shows up, Fist of the North Star.
Yeah, exactly.
And just, he sums up exactly like Fist of the North Star. By the way, watch the movie. It's fantastic on it. He basically does what happens in it. He sends his forces, they all get killed, and then he just shows up and goes,
Ping. And what if I just hit this thing with my sword and splits this unsplittable gate in half?
In a half.
Yeah. Needless to say, everyone in that fortress dies.
Morale went down quickly.
Yeah, it didn't go well. I mean, I mean, this is a weird thing to laugh at, but these guys are sitting above the gate, just kind of giggling and shooting down, like, ha ha ha, we're picking up like twigs. And the gate explodes. And it's like, well, guess we're effed.
Yeah. So those guys are probably pretty pissed. Yeah.
I call dibs on losing the Black Legion, not Emperor's Children.
I'm going to shoot myself on the way down.
So that one's a success.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
The next one I like is the Seventh Crusade, also known as Go After Yourself, Blood Angels.
Which is funny because, like, sometimes, and then, you know what, I gave them credit, and I've said that they didn't retcon as much stuff as people think they retcon, especially with Don. But with this one
got retconned.
I mean, he literally just goes, hey, look, it's Elvis, and sneaks a gigantic force out of the
this is hilarious. Yeah, so Abaddon, as we've said, the Imperium knows only one place Abaddon can come out of, and that is the Eye of Terror. So they've built their entire fortress around it. And somehow Abaddon's able to do the, oh my God, look at that, and sneak out of it, not by himself.
Yeah, it's not like a ship came out.
Yeah.
It's like ships get out of there all the time because it is a large area.
Right.
But like he doesn't.
Not a fleet.
Yeah, he comes out with a giant fleet. Yeah.
And then just skips past the defenders, doesn't go anywhere particularly of value, actually. He just kind of bounces all over the universe, creating conflict. Again, sometimes you have to kind of, when you're writing a timeline, you have to kind of fill bits in. So this one, the Seventh Crusade, we first start reading, it starts off pretty lame, where it's like Abaddon snuck out of the Eye of Terror and then kind of waged a shadow war all over the place.
Well, it's again where he's testing, this time he's testing, to be honest with you, he's testing the logistics.
Mm-hmm.
Because he causes problems in a bunch of areas and just kind of goes, how long is the police response time here?
But then he found Makan, whatever.
Oh, yeah, when he...
this
sorry, Blood Angels players, but this does not go well for you guys. You get
wrecked. So on Makan, the Black Legion bumps into the Blood Angels. And we say the Blood Angels, it's not a scouting party. It's the Blood Angels, effectively. And the Black Legion wrecks them.
They get Chuck Norris kicks. Now, to the Blood Angels' credit, they're not ready for Chaos because I don't think that a lot of these legions even knew that Chaos kind of was still around. I think they thought they were defeated.
Yeah.
They were never coming back. It's been forever since they came out. Yeah. They're gone. I mean, a lot of Marines there's not even that many that are alive that still encounter.
No, that's true. But the Blood Angels found out pretty quick that the Black Legion are back.
I mean, I love that we're going to piss off so many Blood Angels players on this. Because the end of this story is actually wildly heroic. And let me read the notes. A single character led a lightning raid to turn the tide of the battle. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, blah, blah. That's what GW does. The Blood Angels are being wrecked, but luckily one great hero led a lightning assault that somehow confused the enemy enough that they just stopped punching us in the face over and over
again. Blood Angels players, we will be doing a Blood Angels.
We'll do one. You're not Tau. I don't have actually a hatred of you, but this story I was like,
it's just
basically the Blood Angel, the Black Legion was wrecking the Blood Angels all throughout an entire planet, and one dude and 20 guys attacked the Black Legion, went, and ran away. Like, no. But that's what happened because I don't write the stories. That being said, the Blood Angels, it took them centuries to get back from this.
They got ruined by this.
Yeah, their recruiting world went to overdrive.
Again, to their credit, they were kind of just there. And going, hey, guys, the other day I was at the mall, and holy shit, are we being invaded?
Yeah. What's happening? Oh, God, it's all of them. Yeah.
Yeah, how many? Yes, all of them.
Any of you who listen to our podcast know that I'm probably at some point, if I'm going to pick something to talk about, it's going to be the orcs. So, you give me an opportunity to talk about orcs, I'm going to talk about orcs.
This one's actually hilarious.
It's the 11th Crusade, which is pure dumbassery on the part of Abaddon.
Well, I think he was like, hey, what will happen if we mess with the orcs? And the answer was, shit might go bad.
Well, no, that's the thing. That's what happened. His idea was, what if I could navigate my way through the warp? Instead of using a regular navigator, what if I just strap a demon into the navigator's seat? Won't that go great?
It did not.
It did not. He got dropped in front of a walk.
Like, legitimately.
Yeah, like, right in front of it. And holy crap, did the orcs wreck his shit.
Actually, they never talk about what they were actually trying to achieve in the 11th Crusade.
No, okay, that's all. The 11th Crusade was, he strapped a demon into the navigator.
Yeah, but they were supposed to be doing something that didn't happen at all.
Yeah, I can promise you this one did not.
If you're looking at ranking good, like in order of like how well the Crusades did, the 11th is last.
Yeah, it's last. Why? Orcs.
Yeah.
You're also, like, but to be fair, if you drop your fleet in front of a wog, there's not a lot of situations where that's.
If you drop it in front of a wog that you didn't know existed, it's also going to be not the greatest.
Fair enough. And so, yeah, long story short, the 11th Crusade, orcs are better.
I just did WoG Tactics interview last night, by the way, for everybody. Team Black Crusade, this is the current timeline.
So let's jump in.
Well, now, actually, it's not even the current timeline. It's
past. So this is me. I actually had to look this up. So this is going to be a tough one. So when we get into the 13th Black Crusade, one of the biggest challenges is that we're at right around 40 minutes into this podcast. And we can't spend the next 4 hours or no, forget four, 50 some hours talking about the Black Crusade.
Should happen.
So the Black Crusade in the game
is the culmination of all of the Crusades.
Wait, but the 13th Black Crusade in the game was a little less than 5 years. That's about the, from its very early start to, you know, its culmination was right about 5 years.
Yeah. However, in this game timeline of real to our time,
it was 17.
Yeah.
Yes. So this is the 13th Black Crusade. And I have notes here because the reason I'm doing this little side note here for everybody is that we're going to have to skip a lot of stuff here because we're going to focus on Abaddon.
It was from
in the 13th.
It was literally third edition to eighth edition.
Yeah.
Slash ninth edition.
This was, so the 13th Black Crusade, for those who, oh, sorry, 13th Black Crusade, for those who understand, during the, in quotes, we got the Drukhari, the Necrons, the Tau, Admech, Thousand Suns, Death Guard, World Eaters, these are codexes that were launched, Blood Angels, Death Watch, Dark Angels, a couple different times, Black Templars, Grey Knights, and Knights, all were released during the 13th Black Crusade.
And also have stories that involved the 13th Black Crusade.
Some of these guys got multiple codexes in this period of time. So for those of you who are like, oh, they're coming to the 13th Black Crusade, we could make a podcast on the 13th Black Crusade and do years. So for anyone who's like, hey, you skipped something, we know. But what we decided to focus on here is the Abaddon story,
like kind of primarily. Like just what he did, not everything that's happening.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal. He wants to, I mean, one, we already talked about, he needs to kick out the emperor because no emperor means no Astromonicon, which means no travel for the Imperium. And he needs to effectively start isolating and picking apart flanks of the Imperium.
Right.
And the best way to do that, I mean, you can always break the sky.
Let's just break the sky. I think the note I made here is Cadia must stand.
Oh, did I skip that? My bad.
Yeah.
Well, so Abaddon hasn't been like super, he's been decently successful, but he's still, Cadia is a thorn in his side.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit, Abaddon shows up with, hey, man, why don't we just make our ships bigger? Like, how much bigger? How about like we like make planets seem small?
And more importantly, how about I invade with everything in the Eye of Terror?
Yeah, the whole
everything.
Yeah, but also, again, he came out with ships with guns that just were supposed to blow up planets.
Yeah.
When Blackstone Fortresses are the small things that you're bringing?
Yeah, this was an invasion of invasions. Some cool piece about this, when we say he brought everybody, he literally brought everybody. He got, he killed all of Angron's champions, got all of Angron.
Well, he does a bunch of pre-quests.
Yeah.
He kills all of Angron's champions. He gives Bortarian the Hand of Darkness. I should probably read the notes. He does a bunch of weird shit with Fulgrim.
And I couldn't. The Tzeentch stories are just confusing.
They're supposed to be. The Tzeentch stories are time travel stories. Unfortunately,
They're a little bit weird. But he does.
He goes back and forth, and he legitimately does. It's not considered time travel, but it is because it's warp time.
Yeah, and so this is where he gets. For those people who played during this edition, this is why you were able to actually align random forces. It had some downsides in the later part of the edition of Tau'nar. but anyway, of Tau'nar, of Tau'nar. But what you were able to do is the idea here at this point was that Chaos was a truly unified force. You were having, Noise Marines were fighting next to Plague Marines, next to Legionnaires. This was a true fighting force, and he came out. Goal here that he had was to break Cadia, and
he crushes Cadia.
We should probably jump now from our earlier foreshadow to foreshadow part two of the Cadian pylons.
Well, it's really Abaddon basically gets one of the Tzeentch gifts. He gets is knowledge, and he finds out what these pylons are. What they're made of, what their actual true purpose is, which is effectively to keep chaos out, keep the warp out of the Immaterium.
Yeah, and the story I was reading about, that's kind of, the inference I made on the story here is that every time Abaddon came out of the Eye of Terror with his forces, he always bounced when he hit Cadia. And the reason he bounced is because Cadia was immune to the warp. All of his powers just would dissipate. So he became much more one-on-one there. And with the Imperial defenses, again, it's an Imperial fortress world. It's probably designed by Rogel Dorn. This is not something you're going to break easily. Now imagine you go in there at 100% power and you land at 50% power. It's just going to wreck you.
Yeah.
And so these pylons did that. No one knew this. These were just, even the Imperium were just like, we're just super lucky.
This is awesome. This is his Tzeentch gift. He gets the knowledge of what the hell this is. One of the quests was he went and got Black Stone.
Yeah. And what happens is Cadia's, not only is it making them bounce when they attack, but the Eye of Terror, as we discussed, this comes from the birth of Slaanesh. Slaanesh, this is the creation of a Chaos God. This is the ultimate kind of merging of the Materium and the Immaterium. Function, if you guys go Google a map of this era, it's not that big. And the reason why is Cadia.
This thing should have been growing the entire time. Yeah,
was held in check by Cadia. And Abaddon knows that and decides it's a lot easier to invade a galaxy if I have more than one way in.
How about I destroy it?
Yeah, let's just remove it. And so the note I add here is Abaddon decided to use option B for this place. And the B stands for Blackstone Fortress.
And these are the weirdest combo of tech and warp, because Blackstone suppresses warp, but somehow he has it cybernetically.
And I tell everyone, just Google this because I can't describe it. These ships are actually super cool looking. The visuals of the ships are amazing.
Yeah, they're giant, wacky space stations.
And they look super cool. Google, I don't want to spend 20 minutes trying to explain something where you can
just... But they do look... Blackstone Fortresses are awesome.
Yeah, they're super cool.
Also, Eldred had to be retcon.
Yeah. Good game, too. But we'll get to that in another cast.
Also, the best... If you're going to buy a box and you get one for the old boxes on eBay, the Blackstone Black Reach... box.
Yeah. The Black Reach was great.
It was fantastic. So much stuff for the price.
Mm-hmm. So the final story of Blackstone Fortresses are everyone's aware of them. The Imperium finds them all the time, and they just turn them into space stations.
They just don't really know what they are, though.
Yeah,
they don't know the significance of it. They're literally. It's like if you literally went, "Hey, I found a nuclear missile. I put some wheels on it, and I put an engine, and I just drive it around because I don't know."
Describe what it is. The Orc Megatruck Scrapjet. That's literally what an Orc would do. Like, this is my new ride.
Yeah.
What happens if you crash it? I won't know.
Yeah. I was waiting to this part because this is probably my favorite part of the notes. Abaddon wanted them for himself. He tracked down six of them. Eldar felt differently.
Yeah. As much as the Imperium might not know what Blackstone Fortresses are, the Eldar very much so knew what these things were.
The guys that literally fought a race-ending war with them.
With them, yeah. Because what Blackstone Fortresses really are is they're made by the old ones. They never make it clear, but my impression is that these were spaceships the old ones used during the War in Heaven.
Yeah. And I'm saying there's such a paradox, though, because they're made of a non-warp metal, but they're controlled by psychic powers.
Yeah, but they don't diminish the warp at all, which is why it's weird, because Blackstone should go one where
that's what I'm saying. It suppresses it, but it doesn't suppress it at all.
I'm really terrified someone from GW is going to discover the podcast and just find that I just shit-talk everything. And all of a sudden, I'll sign up for events in BCP and just not be invited anymore. But this is shit writing, guys. Anyway, he does eventually pull off two of them. One of them becomes his flagship. He names it the Will of Eternity.
And he does legend. By the way, read these stories.
Oh, this is the beauty of having 17 years of the game devoted to it. The writing's fantastic. And we said stories. The books are good. Just the Codex stories are incredible.
Codex stories are amazing. Yeah. The Blackstone Forge. There's actually a lot of videos on this too. People do a lot of, take a lot of the artwork and do it. You can just YouTube it. I mean, don't leave us yet, but...
Yeah, but...
But it's pretty goddamn awesome.
And this is just to kind of... While this is all going on, because 17 years of the game, the orcs are sensing something, so they're getting uppity. This is the first time the Tau break into the system.
The Tau, well, they've got, they start... They do their phase four?
Sure.
I don't even know why I said that
Who
to you.
Who cares?
But the Tau basically start their last big push. So you've got two sections of Tau. Now you've got the Farsight enclaves, and then you've got Shadow Sun and the rest of the Tau doing their next push. Drakari start just getting rowdy.
Yeah, blaring out of the war.
The Drakari are just taking advantage of the fact that people are not paying attention. They're like, well, we can fight as unfair as we usually fight, but even better.
Should grab lots of people. The two big ones, though, are...
They're not two big ones. They're huge ones.
You're right. These are kind of game-changing ones are the Necrons.
The Necrons start rising and start reclaiming entire sectums of the galaxy. Like, hey, this is our shit. Give it back. And also, a lot of these worlds, the Necrons are buried deep within the core of the worlds and just pop up, and you're just standing there at your job going... Well, this is pretty awful.
Yeah, there's a monolith coming out of the ground, and these robots are coming out. Oh, God, we're all dead. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
The other one is, now the Tyranid timeline's always a little bit tricky because it's been retconned.
Several times.
Yeah, I mean, I could be wrong. I think the Tyranid timeline has been retconned more than any.
I think that you're really pushing into Leviathan almost right now. It's, we're before this, I guess.
No, this is be pre-Leviathan because you're going to get the first, they're going to be hit because they accelerate after Abaddon.
Because the Leviathan's actually coming towards the Sol's sector.
Right, that's where they're going.
They're coming from the bottom, but there's two big waves of Tyranid invasions.
Yep.
And then you've got the I guess you could call it the third, which is the Kronos, which is the one that just becomes anti-war.
Exactly. So effectively, again, this actually is good writing. GW, over a period of time, wrote the galaxy on fire.
The galaxy is a trash fire.
It is a nightmare.
If you were Imperium, you just got two end bosses showed up at the same time, and the ultimate optional boss, which is Chaos, which is you have to do after you complete the game once, is when you fight it. They're just decided to make their big push, and you still have orcs and Tau and Drakari. And Kraftwerk are still the enemy to the Imperium, even though they're trying to fight Chaos.
Yeah, there's a weird part of the story where they align, and I'm not even going to cover that. So we'll get then to what actually happens. And kind of this is the final assault. This is what's going to bring us from where we were to the modern era of 40K. And this is Abaddon, we're going for it. I am coming out of the Eye of Terra. The Imperium knew he was coming. they're actually, all the stories do show Typhus was doing his thing. There was enough stuff coming out of the Eye of Terror.
This is where we go, if you want to be, because I said it at the beginning, Grandfather Nurgle was at his lowest at the beginning, we were talking about. Grandfather Nurgle is at his most powerful right now because they have the plague that's ravaging huge areas of the galaxy. And it is wrecking shit. And so they know they're supposed to be geared up. This is one of those things where you think you're ready and then you just realize you're woefully unprepared because they think that they're getting the crusades and the fights they've gotten before. But this is Abaddon's end game. So he shows up with everyone, like literally everyone.
And they are, I mean, and this is, again, we have to, it's so hard to cover all this. Night Lords are running rampant.
I love that you put Night Lords were Night Lording, which means that they're just causing shit.
You're just creating havoc. There are plagues everywhere.
And they also sent the forces of Nurgle are actually by themselves.
Yeah, they're elsewhere in the galaxy, creating problems to draw forces there. You've also, as we said, the Xenos are arising. So if you're in the Imperium, you're losing sectors to Necrons, who again aren't invading. They're coming up out of the actual planet, so you can't even stop them coming in.
Yeah, they're just there. Yeah.
I believe Ball burned well before this point, but the Tyranid invasion is very apparent.
Well, the Tyranids are ramping it up. Because the Tyranids have been fought back several times now, but the Tyranids are now basically doing what Tyranids do, which is adapting and coming back much stronger. Yeah.
And so Abaddon comes out, and this is the moment. He is there, and this is it. Cadia is going to fall.
Cadia doesn't fall. Cadia gets ruined.
Now, one person, we can't talk about the fall of Cadia without talking about, and I didn't realize, I'll be honest, I didn't know his full name, was Lord Castellan Ursicar E. Creed. By the way, if you're going to name someone, why have the random initial amongst four other words?
I mean, Lord Castellan Edward is a title.
So. I know, but Ursicar E. Creed, just Edward. We know you're British. We know his name's Edward. Like,
it's you know, it's Eunice.
It's not Eunice. It's Edward. It's got to be Edward. They're British.
Creed's a badass, by
Creed's
the way.
Amazing. And like Creed is, for those of you who don't play Imperial Guard, when they finally killed off Creed, spoiler alert, it actually really upset a lot of guard players because he was such an amazing character.
And he's been there since the beginning.
Yeah. And Creed's cool. I'm going to quick hit Creed. Creed is a lowborn who was found after one of the Chaos invasions of Cadia. He's born on Cadia, who rises through the ranks by just being the best fighter. And all of the Astromilitons.
He's also just like wildly the guy that ends up being the guy that's alive after everybody dies.
Yeah.
Several times.
And he's incredible because he's not only is he an incredibly tough soldier, he's a master tactician, love doing traps, all this stuff. There's no one better to be in charge of Cadia than Creed. And Creed does push back Abaddon's forces quite a few times.
You're going to get people that they're going to say Solar Macarius is going to show up and slap you.
It's fine. Creed's cool. Whatever. Now we have his daughter. Another one. However, Abaddon.
Fuck, this is my least favorite part of your notes.
Oh, but it's true. This is what he did. Oh, that's why. Sorry. I forgot why Brad's upset. Yeah, we're getting a part of my notes that, and I know why Brad's upset. So Abaddon comes out with his Blackstone Fortress and all of his forces. And he's going to go, his plan is to basically take all the Blackstone Fortress's guns and just blow up Cadia.
Also, the Blackstone Fortress, again, are like, they went, the Death Star, cool. We're going to mount that gun as one of our guns.
Yeah. However, and Brad, what did my notes say?
Boo. My buddies, the Imperial Fists, had other ideas.
They did. There's another super spaceship in the galaxy called the Phalanx.
I mean, I have to admit the Phalanx is bad.
Phalanx is super. The Phalanx is, as we discussed prior, there was an era called the Dark Age of Technology, which is all forbidden knowledge. Everything should be burned. Unless you find the largest starship in the galaxy.
It's wildly the biggest
thing. I mean, this thing, my description of it is, it's bigger than a Death Star, but it's built like a Gothic cathedral.
Yep.
And it has, it's got some guns on it.
It also looks cool as shit.
It looks cool as shit. And again, Google it. It's called the Phalanx. Just type in Phalanx 40K. You'll see some.
Let's say, cool definitely images. Before 40K, are you going to be looking at a lot of Greek formations?
Yeah, otherwise, yeah. Why are they telling me to look at guys holding spears? No, different Phalanx. Now, to make Brad happy again.
Yay!
Yeah, the way this works is Blackstone Fortress comes out, and who decides to go in?
YOLO Swaggins, Space Wolves go, what would be the best way to handle this? Punch people inside the Blackstone Fortress.
Let's go into the Blackstone Fortress and turn its shields off.
You're like, what's our plan to get out? That's a stupid question.
Shut up.
Punch everyone.
Shut up, nerd. We're doing this.
What are you, a dork?
We're doing this. And they do. They actually fight their way through the Blackstone Fortress to, I guess, the big on-off switch in the middle of it. I mean, whatever. Obi-Wan did it.
I know. Right? I was just going to say, there's like, definitely no handrails.
Yeah, there's no handrails.
Ugh. OSHA's so bummed about all these shifts.
Exactly. They turn off the shields. As soon as they turn off the shields, the Phalanx
just goes with the appearance, buck just goes, wild.
I'm ripping this thing to shreds. And Abaddon's ship just takes a beating.
This is also an epic, but we're not doing this justice. There is shit going down right now.
This to be fair, this is the culmination of everything. It's more, and it is maybe the most important battle of the 40K history.
Besides the assault on Terra, this is a huge battle.
Yeah. I mean, the difference is the assault on Terra, there's a lot more involved here. I mean, the difference with the two of them is at this moment, almost the entire galaxy is involved in this one battle.
I think that there's more.
There are Necrons on Cadia trying to activate the pylons. I'm basically, you guys read the books. I'm not going this deep.
There's just so much happening right now. There's Eldar here.
Yeah, the Eldar are fighting next to Mankind.
Dread's right here right now.
Yeah, Necrons are on the planet with the Imperium trying to activate the pylons. Stop the thing. You are on ticking bomb. The clock is running down quick and everyone's trying to save the day. It's a really cool story. But from Abaddon's perspective, he's on his big, big ship. His shields get turned off by Team Jackass. You know, go
Team
Wolves.
Team Jackass. Yes.
Go Wolves. And then the biggest starship anyone's ever seen just starts blasting holes in his favorite ship. But again, Abaddon doesn't lose. He has a plan. And my plan is to destroy Cadia. And if you mess with my plan A, my plan B, which was Blackstone Fortress, now becomes plan B.
Can I go big or go home? Yeah.
I am going to shove my Blackstone Fortress into Cadia.
At a fairly brisk rate of speed.
Yes. He accelerates to warp speed. You know.
He definitely goes plaid.
Yeah. And launches himself into Cadia, which breaks the planet.
And what's on the planet?
Well, what was on the planet?
True story. Pylons. Also, and the best part about this is, and this is why I think he starts winning the day.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to win the day anyways. He had such a huge force. But I don't think that the rest, and no one else knows the significance besides the Necrons of the pile. Well, I keep having to backtrack this. Eldrad, the Necrons.
Eldrad, do it depends which book you read at which time when it was.
True story.
Blah blah. But for the most part, no one understands how important Cadia was.
And
I would say 99.99999% of the galaxy just is like, oh, it's just a convenience.
Because once these pylons are gone, it is go time for the Eye of Terror. Because the Eye of Terror goes, I'd like to be way bigger. This would be awesome.
We call it the Eye of Terror because it was kind of shaped like an eye. It was a
rift.
Somewhat oblonged circle in one side of the galaxy that over the coming months stretches completely across the galaxy.
It literally cuts the galaxy in half. It is now a huge eye.
Yeah.
But it becomes a long.
It's a big eye and stretches. Google it, and it stretches all the way across the galaxy, splitting it in half. And this is really critical for one simple reason. Abaddon is waging his wars out of the warp. And now he went from a small place.
Well, he's literally going from a door to an infinite amount of places he could come. He can show up anywhere now, basically.
Which there are no so now from, there's no imperial fortress holding him at bay.
No, he can show up and he has literally, you go, hey, where's he going to start his attack? You go, from one side of the galaxy to the other, because that's how big the rift is. It goes, cuts it in half. It's such a big deal on it.
And so from there, this was the point we decided we were going to kind of cut the story, which takes us right to, is this the start of 8th edition?
The start of 8th edition. This is where we start doing arcs and everything else.
Yeah, and so we get, you know, Primaris, Space Marines, which people are going to be hit and miss on if they hear me say that word. But this is where, this takes us to what I would call almost the modern version of 40K, mostly because it was 17 years of the game.
This is the first, this is actually, for people that are liking the, that are big in the lore, mm-hmm. myself included, obviously, this is very exciting because this is the first time in almost 20 years that we moved the storyline forward.
Yeah, we actually should point out this all happened in the year 40,999.99.
Yep.
We are now technically playing Warhammer 41K.
Yep.
The new edition has moved us through, but we're not renaming because that's just dumb.
And the thing about this, this is just exciting because we finally pushed the storyline forward. And to give GW props, they're doing a great job of moving the storyline.
Yeah, they're actually doing it much more aggressively now, and we're getting places. We're not just stuck in the endless thing. So just to kind of recap the last three episodes, we started with Abaddon was born, just a son of a warlord.
In a shitty planet.
A shitty planet. Rose up to the ranks of the most powerful... Right, guys. It was the most powerful legion in the Imperium. Is at the right hand as that legion and a bunch of those turn chaos, loses his way completely.
Like his will to live. Not even it's not even his will to live. It's his direction of life.
No purpose in life.
He has no rudder.
Then in our second cast, we covered how he then refound himself, reinvigorated himself, and created a new legion out of it.
That's when he became Abaddon.
Yeah, and now we're showing how he shaped the universe was from here. At this point, it was his universe to shape, and he did. He shaped the universe, and broke it in half. So, hope you guys enjoyed that. Hope it was easy enough to follow. After some... It's been kind of, I won't call it, it's not dark, dark, but a little bit dark. We're going to have fun the next one. We're going to do Rogue Traders because Brad and I have been discussing. We don't want to just be telling you guys stories because you can just buy a book and read a damn book.
Rogue Traders are going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this episode quite a bit.
We're going to do a bit more kind of quick.
We're also going to argue a bunch. I was looking at these notes. Oh, yeah. I was last night where I was getting ready for this and I went, I don't believe in that.
Yeah, we're going to have fun with it. So again, new website's up, the 40klorecast.com. We're going to be adding more stuff to it. As always, please like and subscribe to this, especially on Spotify and iTunes. It does help us quite a bit. We have the Discord, which is, you know, gaining a bit more traction. More people are interacting there. You're going to see us putting some more stuff up there in the coming future. And for those of you who love my incredible ability to audio edit, we have actually added a Patreon. We do want to upgrade from our current system of two microphones I bought on Amazon and in my basement to something that maybe has audio editing capabilities.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Two dope brothers and a microphone is what I like.
Yeah, it's no. So anyway, we have those things up. All the links are in the show notes, but please come through. The most important piece is the interaction. We do want you guys interacting with us. The Discord seems to be the most popular of these.
It really does help a lot if you, for future, because we're planning a lot of the future based on a lot of everybody asking us things, to be honest with you.
With all that, this is John Barsotti and Brad Chesler.
This guy.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.